So tomorrow there will be the usual program. There'll be the usual meditation and breakfast in the morning. And presumably we'll need to do some clearing up and some work after that. Yes, you just go when you have to go. And the rest of the day will be free. If you don't have to leave, well, I suggest that you go for a walk, that you just relax. And in that way, you absorb the effects of the retreat. And prepare yourselves for returning to the world. I think there's a bit of a tendency for us to think, well, if there isn't a program, then we should just go. But this is a very, very good opportunity tomorrow just to relax, just to do nothing, just to enjoy nature and friendship. And tonight we will have our final ceremony. And because it may take a little bit longer, we'll start a little bit earlier. So we'll have supper at 6:30. And the final puja at 7:30. Otherwise, everything will be as usual. We won't be having any more silence except overnight. But I suggest that you're a little bit careful now that the silence is over. Sometimes after silence finishes, you make up for the time that you haven't been able to talk by talking three times as much. But I suggest you just keep a little bit quiet and try to be more conscious as you speak. Sometimes if you start rushing into speech too quickly, it's quite painful. Anyway, that's the end of the intensive silence, apart from silence overnight. So I've got a stack of questions here. A stack of questions. In England, there used to be a radio program called 20 Questions. I don't know whether any of the English are old enough to remember that. Oh. But as it happens, I've got 20 questions here. We'll see whether the BBC want to use this. I haven't been able to put them in any sort of order, so I'll just deal with them as they come to me. So what is the difference between Buddhatva and Bodhicitta? Please explain. In a certain sense, you could say there isn't any difference. Buddhatva for the non-Hindi speakers is Buddhahood. So in a sense, you could say there isn't any significant difference. What you could say is that Buddhatva is Bodhicitta fully realized. It's when you've got a completely new mind. That's the simple and short answer. So the bodhicitta is an experience of the mind of the Buddha, you could say. But you haven't fully realized that. You haven't fully become that mind yet. So the second question is bodhicitta long-lasting? What are the benefits of it? Well, is it long-lasting, first of all? It can be. It can be everlasting. So let's look at that a bit more closely. We've been trying to develop bodhicitta here. Perhaps some of you just occasionally have had some small experience of that new mind of bodhicitta. Perhaps you've had some experience of going beyond your own selfishness. But presumably, it didn't last. The old mind took over again. But if you keep on practicing, that new mind will come to you more and more often. And gradually it'll become your mind. And you'll be experiencing things almost exclusively from that point of view. So the bodhicitta comes to you slowly in stages. And these are talked of in the tradition as the 10 bodhisattva bhumis. Baba Sahib deals with these in the Buddha and his Dhamma. So the bhumis, the stages of the bodhisattva path, represent different degrees to which the bodhicitta has become your mind. So we are in the position of wanting the bodhicitta to come to us, wanting to develop that new mind. So we're what's called novice bodhisattvas, or aspirant bodhisattvas. We want to have the bodhicitta, but that's not our experience most of the time. Then the bodhicitta does come to us. And at that point we become bodhisattvas of the path. And we're on the first bhumi. So then we practice over a long period of time, and the bodhicitta becomes more and more our mind. And then according to tradition, at the eighth bhumi, the bodhicitta becomes irreversible. And we can't lose it again. So at this point it becomes everlasting. And from then on, it's a question of deepening it until Buddhatva itself. And Buddhatva is the 10th bhumi. So this is the way in which the bodhicitta comes to us. And if you want to know more about it, of course, there's Bhante's lectures in the Bodhisattva Ideal book. So what are the benefits of the bodhicitta? This is a very good question. In many of the Indian and Tibetan texts, there'll be long lists of the benefits of bodhicitta. Well, for a start, we've seen that bodhicitta means getting beyond complaining and blaming mind. Well, the complaining and blaming mind is an unpleasant mind. If you're in that mental state, it's very unpleasant and painful for you. So if you get beyond that mental state, it's much happier, much more pleasant. So the bodhicitta, the state of mind of bodhicitta, is an entirely skillful, entirely positive one. And of course, because it's highly skillful, you're creating only skillful karma. That means that, well, you'll get the benefits of that skillful karma. And so you get very strong benefits for yourself. But also, of course, if you're if you've got bodhicitta, you're thinking of helping others. So the bodhicitta generates an attitude of helping other people. So many, many people benefit from bodhicitta. So you can see that the bodhicitta is very, very beneficial for you personally. And it's very, very beneficial for others too. So the third question is, we recite the Bodhisattva vows by Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar, and Bhante also has given four vows. Are they the same or different? Well, briefly, they are the same. They're different versions of the same four vows. I looked up recently where Babasaheb got those vows from. He got them from the Hastings Encyclopedia of Religion and Ethics. I think it's a 12-volume, it consists of 12 big, fat volumes. And it's got some very good entries on Buddhism. And the vows come in a section on prayer in Buddhism. And Babasaheb has simply quoted them directly from the Hastings Encyclopedia. I don't know who the author of that article was. But the Hastings Encyclopedia was compiled by top academics, top professors. So that's where Baba Saheb got those vows from. Bhante quotes them in the Bodhisattva Adarsh book. And he gives them in a slightly different form. To my mind, the form in which he gives them is a little bit more pleasant, a bit more pleasing. The ones that Baba Saheb quotes are rather awkwardly written. But that was all that was available to him, and he just quoted his source. And I'm just talking of a sort of poetic, from a poetic point of view. But yes, Bhante quotes those same four vows in a slightly different form. The meaning is exactly the same. But maybe I could just speak a little bit more about this whole question of Bodhisattva vows. There are many, many lists of Bodhisattva vows. You could even say there are as many lists as there are Bodhisattvas. Each Bodhisattva makes his own vows. The essential point is that you vow to gain enlightenment, taking everybody else with you. You vow to follow spiritual life, not just for yourself, but for others too. That's why I say that the first of the vows that Baba Saheb quotes is the most important. But then the Bodhisattva sort of fills in the detail. And each Bodhisattva has particular interests and a particular concern with helping beings. For instance, Bhante's teacher, Mr. Chen, had his own vows. He was a rather unusual sort of character. And his vows were rather unusual. But Bhante told me about one of his vows. He told me that Mr. Chen had vowed that he would go into the Vajra hell. And in the Vajra hell are those beings who have completely turned their back on their spiritual commitment. Especially on their Bodhisattva commitment. And apparently, it's according to Buddhist mythology, it's a state in which there's almost no escape. When they put you in there, they lock the door and they throw away the key. You can't get out. But Mr. Chen vowed he would go there and get them out. Well, even if you can't believe the idea of hell and so on, you can understand what that means. He was going to go and help even those who'd completely turned their back on their spiritual commitment. So there's the very general bodhisattva vow. And then you can make much more specific vows, which are your way of working out that general aspiration. Bhante took the bodhisattva vows when he received bodhisattva ordination. But he said he decided he wouldn't take on any list of vows because he felt he should just try to practice the spirit of the bodhisattva ideal. So the four vows are the most common short form of the vows. And they're particularly found in Japan and to a lesser extent in China. And they do really sum up the principal issues that the bodhisattva addresses. Okay, another question. I want to practice bodhicitta sadhana every day. Shall I practice this as part of the refuge tree sadhana, or shall I do it separately? Please explain. Well, first of all, let me say I'm very glad that somebody has decided to take up this practice regularly. I think it'd be very good if a few of us were doing this practice. Bhante said that he would like all of us to have some experience of all of the Mula Yogas. And that the Tibetan tradition is that you do all the Mula Yogas at least 100,000 times each. Yes, shall I practice this as part of the refuge sadhana or separately? Well, you can do it as part of the refuge tree sadhana. Bodhiketu mentioned this on the first question and answer session. There's a form of the practice in which you start with the refuge tree in front of you. And you feel that you are going for refuge with all other beings. So if you're doing prostration practice, if you're doing the prostration practice, then, and you want to do the bodhicitta practice, then you could do the two together. And that would be very effective. If you haven't got time to do them both and you want to do the bodhicitta practice, well, you can just do the bodhicitta practice separately. And you could either do it remembering the refuge tree, Sharanruksh. Or you could just do it the way we've been doing it the last few days. So you've got three choices. First of all, doing the prostration practice, then continuing with the bodhicitta practice.
तो सबसे पहले प्रणिपात साधना के बाद आप बोधिचित्त की जो साधना है उसको निरंतर बनाए रख सकते हैं.
Second, not doing the prostration practice, but seeing the refuge tree and doing the practice with all beings going for refuge.
और दूसरी साधना आप कर सकते हैं कि शरण वृक्ष को आप सामने देख सकते हैं और सभी मतलब लोगों के साथ आप शरण जाते हुए ये बोधिचित्त की साधना कर सकते हैं.
Well, thirdly, just doing it like we've been doing it over the last few days.
और तीसरी बात है कि पिछले कुछ दिनों से हम इसके बारे में
If you're interested in doing it in one of the first two ways, I can give you a form of the sadhana that shows you how to do that. But of course, the essence of the practice is taking other people's failures and sins and pain and giving your happiness.
तो इसका सार इस प्रकार से है कि लोगों की जो भी असफलताएं हैं, उनके जो भी पाप हैं, जो भी मतलब उनके दर्द है, वो आप दे रहे हैं और उनको अपना सुख है वो आप दे रहे हैं.
Okay, the next question. In the Hindi translation of the Bodhicitta Sadhana, it is told that on our right are our mother and father. Oh, right and left are our mother and father. This was not said even once while doing the sadhana. Please explain.
तो जो हिंदी अनुवाद हुआ है बोधिचित्त साधना का उसमें ऐसा कहा गया है कि साधना करते वक्त अपने दाएं और बाएं हम अपने माता पिता को देखते हैं लेकिन यहाँ साधना करते वक्त उसका एक बार भी जिक्र नहीं हुआ.
Yes, this is true. I didn't mention this.
ये सच है मैंने इस बात को नहीं.
And if you want, you can certainly incorporate that.
अगर आप चाहे तो इस बात को अपने साधना में सम्मिलित कर सकते हैं.
Sometimes that sort of detail makes things more difficult. Because you have to get everybody organized so that the ladies are on the left and the gents on the right. And some of the gents come over onto the left and you have to push them back onto the right. But if you find it helpful, well then do it. But if you don't find it helpful, well, just don't bother about it. The main thing is this exchange of the black smoke for the white light. Or you could even say the main thing is that you're opening yourself up to others' sufferings and developing a strong desire to help them. Yes, then I try hard to do the bodhicitta sadhana, but because of the five hindrances, my meditation does not go well.
तो बोधिचित्त की साधना करने का मैं प्रयास करता हूँ, लेकिन ये जो पांच निवरण हैं, इससे मेरी साधना अच्छी नहीं होती.
I try to get rid of those hindrances by doing the four right efforts, but there's no success.
तो जो चार प्रयास है, उसके माध्यम से इनसे छुटकारा पाने का मैंने प्रयास किया, लेकिन मुझे सफलता नहीं मिली.
Is there any good solution to overcome these problems?
तो ये जो समस्या है, इसके ऊपर उठने के लिए कोई अच्छा मतलब रास्ता है क्या?
Well, I certainly know the problem. I'll be honest with you, but I found it a bit of a struggle sometimes getting my mind concentrated during these few days. The hindrances were coming to me. So you can take two approaches. One approach is to say, well, you're not really ready to do this practice.
तो एक दृष्टिकोण ऐसा हो सकता है कि अभी आप इस साधना के लिए उतने तैयार नहीं.
And therefore to concentrate on more basic samatha practice.
और इसलिए कि जो बहुत ही मूलभूत समतः ध्यान साधना है उसके तरफ हमें अधिक ध्यान देना होगा.
And that can sometimes be the best solution.
और ये मतलब कभी हमारे लिए एक अच्छा मतलब रास्ता हो सकता है.
Just do those practices where you do go beyond the hindrances.
तो उन साधनाओं को आप पहले कीजिए ताकि इस प्रकार से निवारण से ऊपर उठा जाए.
The other way round is the other solution is to just keep trying and eventually you'll get somewhere.
और दूसरा रास्ता यह है कि
Generally, I find that the second way works. If I keep on working to stay concentrated and become absorbed in the practice, the hindrances go. Sometimes, though, you find you're so distracted that you're not really doing the practice at all. And the best thing to do then is to just do the mindfulness of breathing or something else that concentrates you. There's something else you can do with visualization if you get distracted. You can focus on a particular aspect of the practice. So, for instance, you could focus on the white light in your heart. Just forget about everything else, but just focus on that white light in your heart. And allow yourself to become concentrated on that object. And then once you've got beyond the hindrances, carry on with the practice in the usual way. I think in general you need to have that sort of creative approach to practice. If you notice that a particular hindrance is in your mind, well, use the practice that you're doing to overcome that hindrance. If you're very restless in your practice, well, concentrate on those aspects of the sadhana that calm and settle. If you're very sleepy, well then focus on those aspects of the practice that are very bright and enlivening. If hatred is in your mind, well then focus on those aspects of the practice that create maitri and positive feelings. If craving is in your mind, well focus on those aspects of the practice that give you a feeling of contentment. Do you see what I mean? So that work creatively with the practice. Just identify what's going on and then take the creative way of dealing with it. I think too often we see a sadhana as like military orders. The general shouts, "Quick march!" And then he says, "Left turn!" And then he says, "Halt!" A right turn! And you're just doing it without really thinking what you're doing. Your body is making all the right movements, but your mind is somewhere else. So we can do that with a sadhana. You can think, "Oh, what's it say I should do now?" But it's a creative process. It's in your own mind. It's your mind. You work with it in a creative way. If you find that the way that Subhuti's described the practice doesn't satisfy you, do it your own way.
अगर आप देखेंगे कि सुगति जी ने जिस प्रकार से ये साधना को बताया है, अगर आपको उससे उतना अच्छा कार्य नहीं हो रहा है, तो अपने ढंग से कुछ कीजिए।
Nobody yet has been arrested for doing the practice in the wrong way.
तो किसी को भी इसके लिए अभी तक मतलब अरेस्ट नहीं किया गया कि उन्होंने गलत ढंग से साधना की।
After all, it's your mind, not mine.
अंततः ये आपका मन है, मेरा मन नहीं।
You can do what you like with your mind. I don't mind.
आपका मन जो है उसके साथ आप क्या करना चाहते हैं ये आपकी मर्जी है, इससे मुझे कोई फर्क नहीं पड़ता।
So you can feel free to be creative in the practice.
तो आप स्वयं को मुक्त समझिए, सृजक रूप से कार्य करिए।
Try to see what the practice is getting at and unfold that in your own way.
तो ये समझने का प्रयास कीजिए कि साधना से मुझे क्या प्राप्त करना है और इस प्रकार से उसको आप खोजिए कि इस प्रकार से अच्छा आप कर सकते
हैं। Actually, probably we all do that already.
तो शायद अभी हम इस प्रकार से बहुत सारे लोग करते हैं।
Quite often people tell me what's going on in their sadhana practice.
तो अक्सर लोग मुझे बताते हैं कि इनकी साधना में क्या चल रहा है।
And there's an enormous variety of ways in which people practice.
और लोग जिस प्रकार से साधना करते हैं उसमें बहुत ही विभिन्न इस प्रकार के मतलब ढंग होते हैं।
And some of it's very very beautiful indeed.
और कुछ लोग जो है बहुत ही सुंदरता से करते हैं।
I remember Amoghavirya, after he was ordained, explaining to me what his sadhana was like.
तो मुझे याद पड़ता है कि अमोघवीरिया उनकी दीक्षा के पश्चात मुझे बता रहे थे कि उनकी साधना किस प्रकार से चल रही
है। And it was extraordinarily beautiful.
और बहुत ही सुंदर, बहुत ही अनोखी उनकी साधना।
So just take a creative approach.
तो एक सृजक दृष्टिकोण अपनाएं।
Yes, after so much difficulty, I visualized before my mind all beings and so on.
तो बहुत कठिनाई से मैं सारे जो मतलब प्राणी मात्र है उनको मेरे सामने संदर्शन का करता हूं।
But immediately afterwards we dissolve everything.
और फिर उसके समय कुछ समय पश्चात ही सब कुछ मैं विलीन करता हूं।
I don't feel good about this.
और इसके बारे में मुझे अच्छा नहीं लगता।
Is it okay if I don't dissolve it?
तो ये ठीक रहेगा क्या कि अगर मैं उसका विलीन ना करूं, उसको विलीन ना करूं?
Well, I can quite appreciate what you mean.
तो मैं इस बात को समझ सकता हूं कि आप क्या कहना चाहते हैं।
You go to a lot of trouble and great difficulty to bring a visualization into being.
तो बहुत ही कठिनाई से, बड़े तकलीफों से आप ये जो भी संदर्शन है वो आंखों के सामने खड़ा करते हैं।
And then Subhuti says, dissolve it all away.
और फिर सुबोधी जी कहते हैं कि आप इसका सबका विलीन कर डालो।
It's a bit like, you know, you with great difficulty you build a house.
तो जैसे मानो बड़े कठिनाई से आपने कोई घर निर्माण किया है।
And then somebody says, okay, knock it down.
और फिर कोई कहता कि ठीक है अब इसको ढा।
But this really illustrates the point that I've already made.
तो जो मुद्दा मैंने इसके पहले बताया उस मुद्दे को ये बात बताता।
See what happens.
देखिए क्या होता।
Yes, you can just think of the beings are still there.
तो आप सोच सकते हैं कि ये जो लोग हैं अभी भी वहाँ मौजूद हैं।
Presumably the problem is that if you think that you're dissolving beings away, you're sort of making them all disappear.
तो जैसे आप शायद समस्या ये हो सकती है कि जब आप उनको आप विलीन करते हैं तो जैसे मानो वो जो लोग हैं वहां से मतलब लुप्त हो रहे हैं।
So just see what happens if you don't dissolve them away.
तो आप देखिए कि जिस प्रकार से आप विलीन करते हैं, अगर ऐसा ना करेंगे आप तो क्या होगा?
See what your feeling is.
तो आपकी भावनाएं कैसी हैं?
See if that creates any difficulties for you.
तो इससे कोई आपको समस्या पैदा होने की या ऐसा नहीं?
And if it doesn't, if it seems to go well for you, then don't bother to dissolve them.
और अगर आपको लगता है कि इससे आपको कोई समस्या नहीं है, कोई तकलीफ नहीं है, तो फिर इसको विलीन करने की आप उतनी चिंता मत कीजिए।
And if that still promotes the idea of exchanging your good wishes for their sufferings, well then you're doing the practice properly.
और अगर आपकी मतलब जो भावना है, आपकी जो भी अच्छी मतलब शुभ, आपकी जो शुभकामनाएं हैं लोगों के लिए है, उनके दुख दूर करने की है, तो फिर कोई चिंता की बात नहीं कि इसको विलीन करना चाहिए।
So there are a few questions about rebirth.
तो पुनर्जन्म के बारे में कुछ सवाल।
Believing in soul rebirth and impermanence at the same time, I find difficult. What to do?
तो आत्मा में विश्वास करना, पुनर्जन्म में विश्वास करना, अनित्यता में विश्वास करना, ये सब एक ही समय में इस प्रकार से विश्वास करना मेरे लिए बहुत ही कठिन होता है। मैं क्या करूं?
Well. Nobody is asking you to believe in soul, in Atman.
तो कोई भी आपसे ये नहीं कह रहा है कि आपने आत्मा में विश्वास करना।
And in Buddhism, there's a great deal of discussion about the relationship between Anatman and the doctrine of rebirth.
तो बुद्ध धर्म में इसकी बहुत अधिक मतलब चर्चा होती है कि जो अनात्म का तत्व है और जिसको हम पुनर्जन्म कहते हैं उसका तत्व है इसके बारे में बहुत अधिक चर्चा होती
है. And Baba Sahib deals with this in the Buddha and his Dhamma.
और बुद्ध धर्म में बाबा साहब भी इस बात को देखते हैं.
So the idea of rebirth and of anatman and of impermanence are not incompatible.
तो ये जो मतलब पुनर्जन्म है उसी प्रकार से आत्मा है अनात्मा है और अनित्य है इसमें कोई फर्क नहीं.
After all, well, just think of yourself in this life.
तो अभी हम अपने आप को इस जीवन में देख सकते
हैं. I've been told that there's no single cell in your body that lasts longer than 7 years.
तो मुझे ये बताया गया है कि मेरे शरीर की एक जो पेशी है कोई भी एक पेशी 7 साल से ज्यादा समय जीवित नहीं रहती.
So there's nothing about your nothing in your body now that was in your body at birth.
तो अभी आपके शरीर में ऐसा कुछ भी नहीं है जो जन्म के समय आपके शरीर में था.
And of course the same is true for your mind, or even more true of your mind.
तो यही बात आपके मन के लिए भी लागू पड़ती है, शायद ये आपके मन के लिए अधिक सही ढंग से लागू पड़ता
है. And yet we still talk about a continuity between birth and your present experience.
और हम अभी भी इस प्रकार से देखते हैं कि हमारा जो जन्म है और हमारा जो वर्तमान अनुभव है इसमें एक प्रकार की मतलब एक निरंतरता बनी हुई है इस प्रकार से हम देखते हैं.
There's a connection between your body at birth and the body that you have now.
तो एक प्रकार का जन्म के समय का आपका जो शरीर था और अभी जो आपका शरीर है इसमें एक प्रकार का संबंध है.
There's a connection between your mind at birth and the mind that you have now.
तो आपके जन्म के समय का जो आपका मन है और अभी का जो मन है उसमें एक प्रकार का संबंध है.
Well, the Buddhist tradition says, well, simply extend that beyond this life to other lives. It says, the Buddhist tradition simply says, extend that idea beyond this life to other lives.
और बुद्ध धर्म में इस प्रकार से बताता है कि यही जो कल्पना है, यही जो विचार है, यही विचार हम दूसरे जन्म तक इसी प्रकार से उसको लागू कर सकते हैं.
So that continuity is not incompatibility with non-identity in philosophical terms.
तो निरंतरता जो इस प्रकार से बनी रहती है, तो ये इस बात से नहीं रहती कि जिसमें आपकी स्वयं की कोई पहचान नहीं.
So it's said that the being in one life is neither the same as nor different from the being in the previous life.
तो इस जन्म में मतलब जो प्राणी है तो वो जो दूसरे जन्म में है तो वो ना तो उसके जैसा ही है ना तो उससे अलग भी.
It's not the same as the being in the previous life because there's no single element that's passed from one life to another.
तो उसका जो पहला जन्म है तो उसका कोई भी मतलब हिस्सा जो है उसका दूसरे जन्म में है, इसलिए कोई भी बात जो है उस जन्म से इस जन्म से संबंधित नहीं.
But it's not different in so far as there is a continuity of causal influence.
लेकिन उसमें फर्क भी नहीं है क्योंकि ये जो निरंतरता बनी हुई थी ये निरंतरता में किसी प्रकार का फर्क नहीं पड़ा.
So that needs of course more thinking, more reflection.
तो अर्थात इसके लिए बहुत ही चिंतन और बहुत ही विचार करने की आवश्यकता है.
And I do recommend what Baba Sahib has to say about it. I think he's very clear.
तो मुझे लगता है कि बाबा साहब ने जो कुछ लिखा है वो आप पढ़े, इस प्रकार का मैं सुझाव देना चाहूंगा. बाबा साहब बहुत ही स्पष्ट है.
But I'll try and find a few more questions about rebirth.
तो पुनर्जन्म के बारे में और कुछ सवाल मैं देखना चाहूंगा.
I don't believe in previous birth and rebirth. So how can I see people as my mother and father while doing the practice?
तो जो पुनर्जन्म है और गत जन्म हुए है इस पर मेरा कोई भी मतलब विश्वास नहीं है, तो किस प्रकार से मैं लोग मेरे माता-पिता इस प्रकार से मैं देख सकता हूं?
Well, you're quite right. You can't.
Sorry.
You're quite right. You can't.
तो ये सही बात है, आप नहीं कर सकते.
If you don't believe in rebirth, then you can't see other beings as having been your father and mother.
अगर आप पुनर्जन्म में विश्वास नहीं कर सकते तो ये विश्वास करना आपके लिए बड़ा मुश्किल है कि लोग आपके माता-पिता थे.
So you just have to try to find other ways of feeling identity with other beings.
तो आपको दूसरा रास्ता ढूंढना पड़ेगा ताकि और लोगों से आपकी पहचान जो है उसको आप बना सकें.
Do you believe in rebirth? Ah, well, that's a very direct question. And, well, I think that my answer is not a simple one. In a way, I don't think I do. I've got no recollection of having lived before. And I've certainly got no foreknowledge of being born again. And I've never had any sort of experience that's led me to believe that other people have been reborn. So, no, I don't have any personal conviction that rebirth is true. Because I've got none of the evidence on which that conviction could be based. But the fact is, I just don't know what happens after death. I don't know what happened before birth. And I'm content to say, well, I don't know. And I'm certainly very open to the Buddhist tradition. The Buddha seems to have taught that we were born again and again. My own teacher seems to believe that we're born again and again. So I'm certainly open to that teaching. But in my own experience, I don't know. I'll tell you what. I'm older than quite a number of you. So I'm quite likely to die before many of you. So I'll probably find out sooner than many of you. And if I do, if I find that I am reborn again, then I'll come and tell you. If I can, that is. I don't know whether I'll be able to, but I'll try to come and tell you. So you may see some little baby saying, "Here I am, I'm back again." But yes, I think that if you don't have to believe what you don't believe. Personally, I left Christianity because it asked me to believe in things that I couldn't believe in. So I'm not going to come to Buddhism and believe things that I don't have any belief in. But at the same time, I've got great respect for the Buddhist tradition. I've got great respect for the Buddha. I've got great respect for Bhante Sangharakshita. So I'm very open to what they've got to say, and I'll see what happens after I'm dead. And the main thing, of course, is to make your spiritual efforts now. So this bodhicitta sadhana is from Tibetan Buddhism, and they believe in rebirth. In the Buddha and his Dhamma, Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar does not believe in rebirth and soul. So is Indian Buddhism different? Please explain. Yes, the bodhicitta sadhana comes to us through Tibetan Buddhism.
Yes, it is true that this bodhicitta sadhana came to us through Tibetan Buddhism.
but it almost certainly goes back to India. What Tibetan Buddhism represents is Indian Buddhism at its fullest expression. Tibetans got Buddhism largely from India. And they've preserved it almost as it was when it came to them. So what happened in their great monastic universities of Sera and so forth was almost exactly what happened in Nalanda and Vikramashila and so on. So we know that this practice probably goes back to India. And certainly the idea of rebirth goes back to India. And all Buddhist traditions until very recently have accepted rebirth. This isn't just a Tibetan Buddhist thing. It was part of original Buddhism, and it's been part of Buddhism right up until the present day. But it's quite true that in the Buddha and his Dhamma, Baba Sahib gives a different interpretation of rebirth. He certainly doesn't believe in soul, but I think we've already clarified that nobody is arguing for a soul. We went into all of this, by the way, on the last Know Your Mind retreat, which was on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. We'll probably have to come back to this topic because it's quite an important one. So yes, it's true that Baba Sahib gives a different interpretation of rebirth, which is not to do with one life succeeding upon another. It is, however, a little bit more complicated than that. Because in the Buddha and his Dhamma, he quotes quite a number of scriptures which mention the idea of rebirth. So for instance, when he talks about the 10 bhumis, he talks about each of them being practiced during one life. So Baba Sahib, at the same time in the Buddha and his Dhamma, talks about rebirth. And my own view is that he was trying to deal with the very difficult problem that modern Buddhists face. I gave you my position on rebirth, and that's my attempt to deal with this problem. And the problem is that we've come to realize that there's a great deal of superstition. And we've come to rely more and more on scientific inquiry. We've come to rely more and more on not saying things unless we've got empirical evidence for them. And we've come to feel we don't want to just believe things because we're told them. And as far as we know, there's certainly no conclusive evidence for rebirth. There seems to be some evidence for it, but I don't know of what value. I recently read a book which brought together all the scientific evidence for rebirth. Some people, some reputable scientists have been trying to find out whether there is evidence for rebirth. And according to this book, apparently children have been found who say they remember things that they could not know in this life. They know all about a village where they've never been. They know all the people in their previous family. And they know important details that sometimes nobody else knows, but which it's possible to verify. This is what the book says. But all this needs much more thorough research. And it may be that in the end it's possible to have clear scientific evidence, proof of rebirth. But for the time being, we can't say that we're in that position. So what are we to do with what the Buddhist tradition says? Baba Sahib tried to resolve the issue in one way. But we modern Buddhists need to wrestle with this issue for much longer. Of course, for Indian Buddhists, there's a special concern. Because the doctrine of rebirth has been used to justify caste. I was born beyond the black water. Apparently that from an orthodox Hindu point of view means that I am lower than lowest of low. I must have done something really bad in my last life to have been born beyond the black water. That's the way they used to think. But it's stupid. It doesn't deserve any serious attention at all. It's worse than stupid, it's evil. Because it condemns some people to impoverishment and ill-treatment. So that's why Baba Sahib was so sensitive about the issue of rebirth. But as far as I know, it's only in India that the doctrine of rebirth has been used to justify social stratification. In so many other countries of the world, Buddhist countries of the world, rebirth has been believed. But it's never, as far as I'm aware, been used to justify the system of graded inequality like caste.
तो इसका उपयोग जो है कहीं भी इस प्रकार से नहीं हुआ है कि जिसमें मतलब एक प्रकार से विषमता के आधार पर ऐसी कोई श्रेणी बद्धता उनकी की गई।
So we need to separate the question of social hierarchy from the question of rebirth.
तो हमने जो सामाजिक श्रेणी बद्धता होती है और पुनर्जन्म का जो सवाल है इसको हमने अलग ढंग से देखना चाहिए।
And need to recognize that caste or graded inequality should never be justified on the grounds of rebirth.
और हमने ये देखना चाहिए कि जो भी जातियां है कि इस प्रकार के मतलब जाति के आधार पर जो विषमता संते श्रेणीबद्धता है इस पर हम किसी प्रकार से विश्वास न करें पुनर्जन्म का आधार लेकर इस पर विश्वास न करें।
And then we're in a position to try to examine the idea of rebirth in the light of our inner experience and of our scientific inquiry.
और फिर हम पुनर्जन्म की तरफ देख सकते हैं कि हमारा आंतरिक अनुभव कैसा है और फिर वैज्ञानिक का आधार क्या है।
So my own position is that I remain open to this teaching.
तो मेरा स्वयं का मतलब दृष्टिकोण ऐसा है कि ये जो शिक्षा इसके लिए मैं खुला हूँ।
And I shall certainly do my best to practice the Dhamma vigorously in this life.
और इस जीवन में मतलब जितना अधिक हो सके मैं धर्म का आचरण करूँ।
And we'll see what happens in the next life if there is one.
और अगर दूसरा जन्म है तो देखेंगे कि क्या होगा।
So if you find that there are teachings which are connected with rebirth, don't feel you've got to accept them.
तो जब आप ऐसी शिक्षा देखते हैं जो पुनर्जन्म से संबंधित है तो ऐसा मत समझिए कि इसे आपको स्वीकारना ही होगा।
But try to understand what those teachings are getting at and find another way of practicing.
तो आप ये समझने का प्रयास कीजिए कि ये शिक्षा हमें क्या बताना चाहती है और कुछ दूसरा रास्ता ढूंढ लीजिए ताकि इसका आप आचरण कर सकें।
So in the text, the seventh verse says that I take all the suffering and pain of my mothers secretly to myself. Please explain this point.
तो सातवें गाथा में ग्रंथ के सातवें गाथा में ऐसा कहा गया है कि मेरी जो माताएं हैं उनका सारा जो दुख है सारा जो दर्द है एक छुपे रूप से मैं स्वयं पर लूं।
So I'm not quite sure what it is that the questioner wants me to explain.
तो मैं इस बात से निश्चित मतलब नहीं देख पा रहा हूँ कि प्रश्न में मतलब वास्तव में क्या स्पष्ट करने के लिए पूछा गया।
Is it the secretly that's the issue?
तो जो मतलब मैं बिल्कुल मतलब गुप्त रूप से उसको लेता हूँ क्या ये मुद्दा है?
Well, if it's that, then it just means that you don't tell everybody about it. You just do it in your own practice.
अगर ऐसा है तो फिर इसका मतलब ये होता है कि आप और किसी को नहीं बताते केवल अपने आचरण करके आप इसको स्वीकार करते हैं।
As I said, you don't wear a T-shirt with that written on it.
तो जैसे कि मैंने कहा कि ऐसा कोई टी-शर्ट आप नहीं पहनते जिस पर ये लिखा हुआ हो।
But yes, it means that you open yourself to the sufferings of others.
तो हाँ, इसका मतलब ऐसा होता है कि औरों के जो दुख है उसके लिए आप स्वयं को खुला करते हैं।
Imaginatively, you take responsibility for them.
और एक कल्पना से उनकी जो जिम्मेदारी है आप स्वयं उठाते हैं।
And you think, well, what can I do to help them?
और फिर आप देखते हैं कि इनको मदद करने के लिए मैं क्या कर सकता हूँ।
And the consequence of that thought is you can go for refuge to the three jewels and try to gain enlightenment for the sake of all.
और फिर इसका परिणाम ऐसा होता है कि जो त्रिरत्न है उसको आप शरण गमन करते हैं और ऐसा करके इनके जो भी मतलब दुख है उसको दूर करने के लिए आप प्रयास करते हैं।
So lack of confidence. Lack of confidence and inferiority, to have fear of somebody, seeing oneself small and suppressed, brings mental illness. Is there any solution for this?
तो आत्मविश्वास का भाव, न्यूनता का भाव, किसी का भय लगना, और इस प्रकार से जो भी मतलब भावना है उसको एक प्रकार से दबाने से एक मानसिक रूप का एक बीमारी निर्माण होना, तीन सब बातों के लिए कोई उत्तर है क्या? इसके लिए कोई अच्छा मतलब मार्ग है?
Yes, so, but some of us do suffer from lack of confidence and fear of others and so on.
तो हम में से कुछ लोग जो है उनमें आत्मविश्वास का अभाव होता है औरों का उनको भय होता है ऐसा होता है।
And some people do see themselves as small and do suppress their own emotions.
और कभी-कभी वे स्वयं को बहुत छोटा समझते हैं उनकी भावना जो है उन भावनाओं को दबा देते हैं।
I don't think this brings mental illness.
और मुझे नहीं लगता कि इससे कोई मतलब मानसिक बीमारी है।
In the sense of meaning you have to go to a mental hospital. If it's very extreme, of course it does. But it doesn't inevitably and always lead to that. Sometimes it can lead one to behave in irrational ways. But I think it is probably quite common in India. Partly it's a legacy of caste. Because in the caste system, many people will have been told that they were inferior and so on. But I think it's also the consequence of the quite difficult circumstances under which many people were brought up. Often not enough money, not enough food, and so on. And particularly for some people, life can be very hard indeed. And particularly small children, you may have not have got the support and encouragement that you needed. So this can leave one with a strong sense of lack of confidence. And that's a very painful and difficult thing to experience. We all of us need to recognize that some of us feel that. And if we see people who feel like that, well, we need to encourage them, we need to support them, we need to love them. That's what the bodhicitta practice leads us to do. But if you find yourself in that position, well, you need to recognize that this is a conditioned habit. It's something you've learned from very early on in your life. And then you need to re-educate yourself, as it were. You need to sort of think, well, no, I'm not small, I'm not inferior. I've got the potential for Buddhahood. I'm a human being like everybody else. You need to remember your good qualities. Maybe sometimes you need to go to your friends and just ask them to remind you of your good qualities. And especially you need to engage in spiritual life, in spiritual practice. And if you practice ethics and you practice spiritual life, you're slowly gaining confidence. It's as if we get a certain amount of psychological confidence from our early lives. The way our parents relate to us and our early experiences in life give us a feeling of confidence or lack of confidence. Well, if you didn't get the kind of love and support that gives you that psychological confidence in childhood, you've got to create it for yourself now. And you'll do this by your spiritual practice. And it will be very difficult. And you need a lot of support from spiritual friends. But it definitely will come. You'll get your confidence from your spiritual progress. You'll get your confidence from living a good life. And this will gradually fill for you the hole left by your upbringing. And personally, I've seen many, many examples of this. People who started off very, very nervous and inferior and unconfident. But just by applying yourself to spiritual life and practice, you build that confidence again. But it makes all the more important that there's a positive atmosphere within the spiritual community. If there's all that blaming and complaining going on, it just knocks people's confidence. If there's that kind of unpleasant atmosphere, it really doesn't help people who are emotionally vulnerable. So we need to remember this. Okay, let's deal with there are a few questions which are to do with the way in which the practice goes. When somebody behaves badly in our practical life, steals our things and so on, you say that this is like a hidden treasure that you found. But sometimes people do it again and again, seeing we are spiritual, they walk over us, oppress us and deceive us. So they say, ah, well, he's practicing the bodhicitta practice. We can do anything to him. This is the fear, isn't it? Well, maybe I shouldn't answer. Maybe I should just leave it to you to work it out. But of course, it's not really quite like that. It's not that you just let people walk all over you, as we say. I said there's a difference between being between serving people and being servile. If you don't react, that will have an effect. If you're concerned for the other person, that will have an effect. And if you're able to speak with them and explain what's happened, you'll have a very big effect. We're not talking about just letting people hurt you. What we're talking about is not reacting. Not falling into hatred and ill will. Not falling into blaming and complaining. But trying to enter into a proper human dialogue. Not letting people just take advantage of you. If you're a very big bodhisattva, you may even do that. You may think that this is the best thing. Let them take it. There's that famous story of Hakuin, isn't there? One day, Hakuin was a Zen master who lived alone in the forest, in the mountains. And one day there was a girl in the village nearby.
और वहाँ एक तो मतलब गांव में एक लड़की थी जो रहती थी।
And she became pregnant.
और वह मतलब हाँ गर्भवती रह गई।
Who's the father?
तो उसका पिता कौन है?
So when the child comes, she takes it to Hakuin and says, "Here, monk, here's your child. Look after it."
और फिर उसका जो बच्चा पैदा होता है, तो वो जाती है उसके पास और कहती है कि हे भिक्षु, ये आपका बच्चा है, आप उसको लीजिए।
And she just left the child there.
और बच्चा वहीं छोड़ दिया।
And he said, "Is that so?"
और फिर वो कहता है, ऐसा है क्या?
And then she went away.
और फिर वो वहाँ से चले जाती है।
He brought the child up.
वो बच्चे को मतलब बड़ा करता है।
And then one day, the girl, she thought, "Oh dear, I've done something very wrong."
और फिर एक दिन वो लड़की सोचती है कि मैंने कितना बुरा काम किया।
I've blamed that blameless monk.
मैंने उस भिक्षु के ऊपर आरोप किया है।
And so back she went.
और फिर वो फिर से वापस उसके पास जाते हैं।
And she said to the monk, "I'm very, very sorry. You are not the father. I've wronged you badly."
और वो कहते हैं कि मुझे बहुत ही मतलब पछतावा हो रहा है, बुरा लग रहा है। तो आप इसके पिता नहीं हैं, मैंने आपके साथ बुरा सलूक किया।
And he said, "Is that so?"
और वो कहता है, ऐसा है।
So that was his bodhisattva non-reaction.
तो ये उसकी बोधिसत्व की प्रतिक्रिया न देने की मानसिकता।
He was prepared to let them think anything of him.
तो इस बात के लिए तैयार था कि जो होता है वो होने दो।
He just got on with looking after the child.
तो उसने उस बच्चे की परवरिश की।
And he didn't then become attached to the child.
और उसके बाद उस बच्चे से वो आसक्त नहीं हुआ।
So that's a very high example of what this practice is trying to get us to do.
तो ये साधना मतलब हम क्या कर सकते हैं, कहां पहुंच सकते हैं, इसका एक बहुत ही बड़ा ऐसा आदर्श उदाहरण।
And well, look at the effect it had on that young woman.
और वो जो मतलब युवा लड़की थी, उसके ऊपर इसका कैसा असर हुआ, आप उसके बारे में देखिए।
Just imagine she brought the child to him. Just imagine she'd taken the child to him.
तो आप कल्पना कीजिए कि वो बच्चा उसने उसके पास लाकर छोड़ दिया।
And he says, "That's not my child. Look, you know, nobody knows who the father is. There are so many men involved."
तो फिर वो कहता था कि ये तो मेरा बच्चा नहीं है और कोई भी नहीं जानता कि इसका बच्चा के कितने सारे लोग थे।
You know, you're such a bad woman.
हाँ, तू इतनी मतलब बुरी औरत है।
Oh, as she then said, no, you're the only one.
और फिर वो कहेंगे कि नहीं, आप ही एक है।
And then, you know, we all know what a bad monk you are.
और हम सब जानते हैं कि कितने बुरे भिक्षु आप हैं।
And it would just get worse and worse and worse.
और फिर ये बहुत ही बुरा होता जाएगा, बुरा होता जाएगा।
And everybody would lose, everybody would be damaged.
और हर एक को मतलब इससे नुकसान पहुंचेगा, हर एक का बहुत ही नुकसान होगा।
So he just says, "Is that so?"
तो उन्होंने कहा, ऐसा है क्या?
And everything gets worked out.
और हर एक चीज अच्छे से होगी।
So actually, if you can take on the bodhicitta, this particular approach, you can solve things that it's unimaginable that you could do any other way.
अगर बोधिचित्त का इस प्रकार से आप दृष्टिकोण अपनाते हैं, तो आपके कल्पना के बाहर ऐसे ढंग से बहुत सारी चीजों को आप उसके ऊपर उड़ सकते हैं।
In a way, it's quite difficult to argue this.
एक प्रकार से मतलब यहाँ उस प्रकार से वाद विवाद करना बहुत ही कठिन।
You have to have a certain sort of faith in the effectiveness of bodhicitta.
तो बोधिचित्त का जो परिणाम कारक है, उसमें एक प्रकार से आपकी श्रद्धा होनी चाहिए।
Yes, somebody could say, "Ah, well, but if you just give way, then they may take advantage of you, and we'll be back in caste and all that."
तो ऐसा कोई कह सकता है कि अगर आप इस तरह से छोड़ देंगे, तो फिर लोग आपका फायदा उठाएंगे, फिर से आपको जातीयता में डालेंगे, ऐसा कुछ हो सकता है।
But the bodhicitta is such a different state of mind.
लेकिन बोधिचित्त एक बहुत ही अलग प्रकार की मानसिकता
है। It's on another level altogether.
तो पूरी तरह से एक अलग स्तर पर आप जाते हैं।
And if you have this attitude, it's going to change things in a very profound way.
अगर इस प्रकार का दृष्टिकोण हम अपनाते हैं, तो बहुत ही गहन तरीके से चीजें जो है वो बदल जाती है।
Most dispute that we see in the world happens by reaction.
दुनिया में जो भी विवाद हम देखते हैं, तो अक्सर ये विवाद जो है प्रतिक्रिया देने से निर्माण होता है।
Everybody reacts to everybody else.
तो हर एक व्यक्ति हर एक को प्रतिक्रिया देता है।
And it just gets worse and worse and worse.
और फिर उसमें और भी वो बुरा बुरा होते जाता है।
And there just has to be fighting and dispute.
और इस प्रकार से संघर्ष होता है, विवाद चलते रहता है।
But if we go on to another level, we cut through all that reaction.
अगर हम दूसरे स्तर पर जाएंगे, तो सारी जो प्रतिक्रिया है, इस प्रतिक्रिया से हम परे चले।
So traditionally, the bodhicitta is talked of as a kind of force in the world. It's not a mind that calculates, oh, well, this will be best or that will be best. It's just like a force for good operating in the universe. And it just lifts us onto another level and completely changes what happens. So I think that in a way we need a certain amount of confidence, of even faith in that state of mind. So just try it. Really try it. Really try to work from this basis. And see what happens. Do you end up just back in slavery? Or will you change the world? Personally, I'm convinced that you'll change the world. But you're going to have to try. And I think that if we think in terms of calculation, well, we won't get bodhicitta. We need to sort of leap onto another level of thinking. Jayamati's leaping onto another level. You okay, Jayamati? Yeah. So I think that's probably all we've got time for. And we'd better close there. I'm sorry, there are more questions. But most of them have been dealt with directly or indirectly in what's been going on before, what I've talked about before. But I think the main point is, let's try to take the risk to develop bodhicitta. All this blaming, all this complaining, that's not getting us anywhere. It's just making things worse. So let's just leap beyond it. And take difficulties as opportunities. And in that way, we can really change the world. So, we're coming now to our last group session. And you've got about 2 hours. And in that time, you can do quite a lot. So, I'd like you to do 2 things. I'd like you to just think back over the retreat and just see what you think about the retreat. What do you think has been effective in the retreat and what do you think could be better? But there are always things that can be improved. I'm not talking about the physical arrangements. Of course, you know, food can always be better. Or the pillows can be softer. The pillows can be softer. So I'm not suggesting complaining about those sort of things. But the things that we've done in the program, the things that we've done in the sessions, any way you think those could be improved. If you think there's something that could be done better, it's not a criticism. We won't take it as an offense. We won't take offense. We'll just listen and try to see if we can use that. And what did you find particularly useful or effective?
और खासकर कौन सी बात आपको बहुत ही उपयुक्त लगी और बहुत ही परिणामकारक लगी?
So could you just spend a bit of time evaluating your experience of the retreat?
तो शिविर का जो भी आपका अनुभव है, तो एक प्रकार से कुछ समय लीजिए उसका मूल्यांकन करने के लिए.
And then can you give some time to making resolutions?
और फिर कुछ समय आप ले सकते हैं स्वयं के लिए ताकि आप कुछ संकल्प कर सकें.
You know, we usually do this at the end of these retreats.
आप जानते हैं कि शिविर के समाप्ति पर हम ये करते हैं.
So you could make a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 resolutions.
तो आप 1, 2, 3, 4 या 5 इस प्रकार के संकल्प कर सकते हैं.
I suggest not too many.
मेरा सुझाव है कि बहुत ज्यादा मत लीजिए.
Better one that you keep than 10 that you forget.
तो एक संकल्प लेना ज्यादा अच्छा होगा ताकि 10 संकल्प लेकर हम उसको भूल जाएं.
And try to take into account your experience during this retreat.
और इस शिविर के दौरान आपके अनुभव कैसे हैं उसको भी ध्यान में रखिए.
And find the things that you can really do when you leave here.
और जब आप यहां से जाएंगे तो ऐसी कौन सी चीजें हैं जो आप कर सकते हैं उसके बारे में सोचिए.